Now it's CSL, Charlotte Sports Live.
Well, we are seeing shades of 1983 as the NC State Wolfpack continue one of the most improbable runs in NCAA tournament history. The Pack keeps on dancing as they'll make the trek from Tobacco Road to the desert to play in the Final Four.
Plus, Cleveland is where we'll crown a women's national champion, and we're guaranteed to see a Carolina team play for all the marbles after both of our remaining teams get Easter Sunday dubs earlier today.
So, and then there were four. Welcome into Charlotte Sports Live on this Easter Sunday. Happy Easter to you all. He's Gabe McDonald. I'm Grace Grill, and we've got a loaded show for you tonight. Full hour on deck.
Yeah, the Final Four is now set. We'll have tournament action from both the men's and women's side. Plus, we'll take you out to Richmond for the Toyota Owners 400. The Hornets in action tonight as well. And the Braves looking to start the season with a sweep of their division rivals in Philly. But speaking of rivals, we had an in-state rivalry in the Elite Eight, and that is where we start tonight with Duke and NC State. Tobacco Road rivalry in the heart of Texas, a rematch of the ACC tournament quarterfinals with a trip to the Final Four hanging in the balance. You pick up the action here in the second half. Duke in control with the 6-point lead, but the Wolfpack starting to fight back. Some great team ball here ends up in the hands of Muhammad Diarra, and he throws it down, and it's back to a 4-point game. A few minutes later, State now in front by one. Kyle Filipowski going to work in the lane. Flip throwing up a tough shot over Diarra. But look at this. Gets the lucky roll and the foul. Got to flex on him a little bit after that. When the Blue Devils regain the lead, they are now up two. That lead, it wouldn't last much longer, though. Just over seven to play. NC State gets the break going. Michael O'Connell from the wing. Bang, a big-time three as the Wolfpack go up nine down the stretch, and they are starting to feel good about this one. Under two to play now, State looking for the dagger up 10. O'Connell to DJ Burns, and look at the big fella do his thing. Go, DJ. That's my DJ. The Rock Hill native getting three the hard way and putting a bow on the upset. Burns with a 29-piece nugget, and his pops is loving it there in the crowd. And it's time to get the party started up in Raleigh. NC State continuing its Cinderella run through March and advancing to the Final Four for the first time in 41 years after taking down Duke 76-64.
Honestly, I didn't even at first think I was coming here. So for this, it's just an absolute blessing, and I think that man needs a lot more respect still.
That's the beauty of basketball. You know, you can build these connections, build these memories. And I just say personally, I'm just glad to be doing this for my last little year of college basketball.
There's just plays consistently being made by everyone that, you know, it might not be covered or might not be in the stat sheet or might not be all over, you know, social media. But everyone's been making huge plays down this run.
And everyone said we want to win the ACC. Check. What's your other goal? Is obviously, you know, go on and compete for a national championship. And we're still alive for that opportunity. Means a lot. You know, I think, you know, our school deserves it. You know, our players have really worked hard.
All right, Tennessee and Purdue in the early game. Volunteers with a 5-point lead in the first half. SEC Player of the Year Dalton Knecht connecting all the dots as he hits back-to-back threes. He had 18 first half points. Tennessee up 11. All right, later in the first, Zach Edey here on the pick and roll, sets and slams it home. And then this one too. This one just nice and easy off the glass. Edey with 19 first half points. Purdue led by two at the break. Second half, Dalton Knecht, man, he has got to be my favorite player to watch in this tournament. Absolutely electric. He gets the steal there. He finished with 37 points. But that man, Edey, was gonna eat. Braden Smith drives here and feeds it to Zach Edey for another salami sandwich. Edey, a career-high 40 points and 16 rebounds. This one close down the stretch, but Purdue starts to pull away here with a Lance Jones three. And Purdue is heading to the Final Four for the first time since 1980. They win it 72-66 over Tennessee.
Some great games today. The Final Four officially set. We got Purdue, we got UConn, we got Alabama, NC State. Kevin Keats was about to get fired. Everybody was calling for this man's job just a few weeks ago. Comes in, they win five in a row in the ACC tournament. They were down at the half against Louisville. Louisville, folks. They come out, they win the ACC tournament, and now they're just taking down all these great teams. But it's the two DJs, DJ Horn, DJ Burns, even Michael O'Connell hitting some big threes. A very complete team, and this could be their year. I mean, obviously, we never really saw this coming. We thought it was going to be UNC or Duke making it here. But NC State, a great story. It's just good to see them keep this going.
You know, two things about this NC State team. One is that they're not just pulling these games out. Yeah. They are decisively
dogging these teams, yeah.
They are decisively winning these games. And then you see them in the post-game game pressers, and they are calm, cool, and collected. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's one thing to say, like, every team has their thing. Like, we don't think we're the Cinderella. We always believe this, yada, yada, yada. That we call it coach speak. We call it team speak, right? No, these guys are level-headed and steady. That's been impressive. But also the fact that they are on this run that just seems like it's fueled off swagger. They think they can compete with anything.
Absolutely.
The thing that I hate about this is that I should be convinced, and I'm still not, because I know that the team that UConn is, and I know the team that Purdue is, and that still makes me nervous, even though I see what NC State's doing.
They got two of the biggest guys. I mean, you have Zach Edey, you got Donovan Kling, and two guys that we know are tough to guard. Now, you do have a guy in DJ Burns, not as tall, but still stocky, so I think he can hang around with those guys down low. But you have to think about some of these other teams, too. Alabama can shoot the lights out. They can score at will. Obviously, a good inside-out game with what UConn is able to do. So it's going to be a really great weekend of hoops, but NC State, I mean, just on this fueled run, you got to feel good about this team just keeping that momentum going. Because normally when we see a team make this kind of run, it's pretty hard to stop them this
time. The other thing, too, I saw a stat today that NC State turns the ball over at like a 13% rate, which is like 10th best in Division I basketball, which on top of scoring, I think that's super impressive here in March. All right, well, meanwhile, Dawn Staley and South Carolina, well, I would say they have this tournament thing figured out. The Gamecocks sweated out a Sweet 16 win over Indiana on Friday to advance to their fourth straight Elite Eight. And that's where today they met with 3-seed Oregon State. And the Beavers, they were not backing down. Second quarter, Reagan Beers off the pick and roll. Good off the glass and count it. She had a double-double with 16 points and 11 rebounds. She missed the free throw, though, so Oregon State down 5. At the other end, it is Ashlyn Watkins. And, you know, it's just really hard to guard somebody with that kind of bounce. And that one bounced in for the and one. But she, too, would miss her free throw, so South Carolina up 6. Second quarter, Camila Cardoso forces the turnover, and she'll race for an earned bucket in transition. Cardoso, 14 points and 9 rebounds. Still just a 4-point game, though. But the Gamecocks, they start to turn it up. This a part of a 12-0 run. Watkins with the steal. And Tahina Pau-Pau dishes it to Sanaya Fagan. Big third quarter for the Gamecocks. They outscore the Beavers 21-13, but the Beavers match him in the fourth. Problem was, though, damage was already done. Tessa Johnson, she led the way for the Gamecocks with 15 points, and South Carolina is headed back to the Final Four with a 70-58 win over Oregon State.
Just proud because we beat the odds. I mean, the odds said that we shouldn't make it back to the Final Four. Last year rocked me. It rocked me. It rocked me because we had a team full of players who did all the right things. And we don't know why. And we often try to ask God why. You know, why? And, you know, today I stand here as our why.
Face the winner of this one, NC State and Texas. We'll pack down 3 in the first quarter. Madison Hayes to Isaiah James. Yes, ma'am. Second quarter, and NC State now on top. It's Sanaya Rivers. She's going to take it coast to coast. You can go ahead and count that bucket. 3-point play puts State up 7. They led by 12 at the half. I think of James a big reason why. She did not miss from deep in the first half, going 5 for 5 from behind the arc. And she finished with a game-high 27 points. River Baldwin, second leading scorer for the Pack, with 16 points. That one gave NC State an 11-point lead, or rather this one would give NC State an 11-point lead in the fourth. And NC State women, they are still dancing. They upset top-seeded Texas 76-66, and they advance to the Final Four for just the second time in program history.
I'm so proud of them. You know, we work day in, day out since the summer. You know, everybody doubted us. We wasn't even ranked before the season. Now we're going to the Final Four. It just tells us about ourselves. You know, we're going to sit on this win for a good 2 days, but then we're going to go straight. You know, we're hungry. You know, we're going to go straight to that game. You know, I'm sorry. We're going to go straight to that game. But, you know, the SEC played good defense. So, you know, we got to do the same intensity.
Man, it's almost like we should stop doubting NC State. This might be their year. I think it's neat because NC State, both men and women, UConn, both men and women. So those two programs have a chance to maybe double dip here.
And I think the thing with NC State, I mean, she just said it there, weren't even ranked before the season. A team that is historically been pretty solid, but they lost a lot of pieces from last year. They seem to reload. Isaiah James, Sanaya Rivers, two girls that could shoot the ball just really well. So I think this is going to be a really good matchup. Now, South Carolina, they got some size. Camila Cardoso, Malaysia Fulwiley coming off the bench. They're undefeated for a reason. So it's going to be a tough matchup, but also want to talk about the games coming up tomorrow. Those games could be
We're all waiting for the one tomorrow.
Themselves. You got LSU and Iowa, rematch from the Natty. Then you got Juju Watkins and Paige Beckers going head-to-head. Those two games could be a Final Four by themselves. It's just fortunate that we get those two games tomorrow. Then we get another round of great games this week.
Okay, so
the women's
here,
game is really at the top of the
So
game.
Here we are talking about the women's game where we're sitting here, and I feel like the whole nation is watching this women's tournament really for the first time since I can remember. I mean, I played basketball growing up, and I follow Notre Dame basketball, so I knew the Notre Dame players, but, you know, you didn't really follow the women's game as much, where I feel like now everybody can name these players, and it's big time from all different schools, Paige Beckers, Caitlin Clark, but you're right, the game tomorrow is going to be the one that we all have our eyes on. That was the most watched game last season, and I don't expect anything
less. I might break a record, too. A lot of star power in the women's game, so it's good to see them at the top of the game right now. Well, we had some good old short track racing up in Richmond. The Cup Series under the lights for the first time in the 2024 season, and Mother Nature actually played a part in this one. All the action from the actual track coming up next on CSN.
Plus, the Hornets continue their late-season homestand with another strong contender in the QC. We take you to the Hive next as the Clippers made their way to Uptown for an Easter Sunday tilt. And have you ever wondered what it takes to pull off a NASCAR race day broadcast each Sunday?
Turns out there's a lot more that goes into it than you think. A behind-the-scenes look is coming your way next when Charlotte Sports Live returns.
Back here on CSL, Hornets back at the Hive for their third of eight straight at home. All the stars out for this one. One of those being Paul George, who definitely ate his Wheaties this morning. PG-13 taking over early and often tonight. Hits the triple from the wing early in the second. And then a few minutes later, he follows that up with another three with two defenders all over him. George with 22 of his game-high 41 points in the first half. Hornets down eight at the break. They try to keep pace in the third. Trey Mann with the feed to Miles Bridges. He dials up from distance with the corner Trey. Charlotte back within 10. Bridges led the Hornets with 33. Later in the frame, Brandon Miller gets his shining moment against his favorite player. And he gets away with a bit of a push-off as well, but he still hits the three with George in his face. And just like that, Charlotte is back within 5. Miller dropped 22 tonight, but that's as close as it would get for the Hornets. Led by Paul George, the Clippers take this one by a final of 130-118.
He was so good, you know, we had to double team him everywhere. He would have had 60. And when you do, with the amount of skill they have on the floor, it's what's going to happen, you know. So you can take things away. Double teaming that team is a lot different than tomorrow night's going to be the same thing. You're talking about a different level of roster talent.
On the same position. So mentioned that game coming up tomorrow night. It's the fourth of an eight-game homestand as the league-leading Celtics come to the Spectrum Center tomorrow night. Gabe?
As the old saying goes, Virginia is for lovers. Well, when it comes to racing in Richmond, there's very little love lost when NASCAR heads to the historic track. Richmond Raceway, also known as the Action Track, living up to its name once again with the Toyota Owners 400 running under the lights tonight. Let's take you up to Richmond now to a wet Richmond. That is, race delay by a bit due to rain. We'd actually start the race with the wet weather tires with a little bit more grip. So that played a part in this when Kyle Larson would lead the field to green after winning the pole on Saturday at Richmond. But towards the end of stage one is when we see our first big shakeup. It's Josh Berry in the four car getting into the rear of Daniel Suarez. The 99 spinning out, nearly running into the inside wall. We would see the yellow flag come out with just 7 laps to go in the opening stage. The stage would actually end under caution with Kyle Larson and Bubba Wallace in the top 2 spots. Larson takes the stage and gets his 3rd stage win of the 2024 season. So let's take you to stage 2, a relatively clean one. We see another Chevy Toyota duo at the front of the pack. This time it's Martin Truex Jr. and Alex Bowman. A tight race to the start finish line, but it's MTJ edging out Bowman to take the 2nd stage at Richmond. But here we are on stage 3, and that's when we truly see the action. Just 2 laps to go. Truex still in front, but Bubba Wallace gets into Larson. He spins out, bringing out another caution. Truex's crew chief, James Small, not too pleased about that with the 19 being so close to a win. Back under green on the overtime restart. After being a 2nd faster on pit road, Denny Hamlin getting a good jump on the 19 with 2 laps to go. And it's Hamlin riding that momentum to victory lane for the win. And Truex definitely wanted the last word. A few love taps to the back of the 11. Then he even gets into it with Kyle Larson. A truly frustrated Martin Truex Jr., but an elated Denny Hamlin after taking home the checkered flag in Richmond.
This is a team win for sure. This trophy needs to go and to each one of these pit crew members' house. It just did an amazing job. They've been killing it all year. Thanks to Mavis Tires and Brakes for coming on. Man, we got some good runs with these guys. So thank Toyota, Jordan Brand, Coca-Cola, Shady Rays, just everyone that makes this happen. It's just such a great feeling when you know you can come in and have a pit crew like that.
Bechtel Short Track Racer. This is Denny's second win of the 2024 season and number 53 for his Cup Series career. Now, every Sunday leading up to the green flag waving, the Fox Sports crew gives you extensive pre-race coverage, and it's a bit ironic when you think about the amount of money that goes into every NASCAR broadcaster on Fox Grid.
Yeah, well, after all, everything isn't what it seems, and as our Mike Lissette reports, the thing that costs the least is probably what makes the show the success that it is.
No, everything is a what have you done for me lately.
When it comes to the entire FS1 race day crew, what you see really is what you get.
It was only a 312 lap race.
This is a sport that we know and we love.
I think whoever is quick at the beginning of the race, that might not be the car at the end.
We've lived this, so the conversations, I think, come very easily to us.
They definitely need the luck.
Byron McReynolds, Jamie McMurray, and Shannon Spake have a kind of camaraderie that can't be faked.
Later. I'm glad that you mentioned Christopher Bell.
Well, they make it look easy. The truth is, it's really not. Even after doing 6 years of shows together.
We want things to be spontaneous, but you also have to have some structure too, because we're trying to do a lot in a pretty short time as far as our air window.
Is someone watching?
That structure is actually shaped a full 6 days before they hit air. A team of more than 50 people helped create the content. Then on Sunday, hours before showtime, it's all presented in an open discussion, in which it's decided what stays.
The track is different, the surface.
And what goes.
You had, I don't know, 8,000 or 9,000 concrete bleachers on the back, and that was it.
I think it is important that everyone in the room has a voice, and because every piece of the show is helping tell the story.
Nice to officially meet you, David.
By the time they arrive in studio, there's a plan in place. However, there's also an understanding it all can change.
Sometimes you're in a situation where the show has to collapse or expand.
Everyone has to be flexible. Fortunately, the real star of the show has that down to a science.
Hopefully we're not ruining the magic, but that big spacious garage it looks like the crew is broadcasting from is actually a big spacious green screen, much like this one. Now up close, it's not much to look at, but on TV, they can do just about anything.
Regan Smith is standing by.
One segment we can start in front of a big window, and then we can go to the balcony. It just gives us versatility.
In turn, it makes their job a little more fun. And unlike a background,
if that goes home and plays into the living room,
that is something that's as real as it gets.
That's the most important thing.
You're clear, sir. All right, thank you. Thank
TV
you.
Magic indeed. Mike Lissette, Charlotte Sports Live.
All right, thanks, Mike. Well, there's been a lot to unpack so far this season for Charlotte FC, as the club is six matches into the season. To help us do that, none other than Dean Smith. We've got him joining the show next.
And it's a Carolina homecoming for one of the greats to come out of Rock Hill. Coming up, we hear from the newest member of the Black and Blue, Jadeveon Clowney. Keep it here. We've got more CSL in 2 minutes.
Back on Charlotte Sports Live, and we're talking baseball. The Atlanta Braves opening up the 2024 season on the road in Philly. Sean Murphy left the season opener on Friday with a left oblique strain, and he was put on the 10-day IL. Despite that loss in the lineup, though, the Braves have not lost on the field. They took the first two from Philly and were looking for the series sweep today. Ozzy Albies in the top of the first with a runner on. He is going to take Ranger Suarez deep to left field. He hit his first home run yesterday, and there is number two on the season, and that put the Braves on top 2-0. Chris Sale making his regular season debut for the Braves, facing Kyle Schwarber to start, and that's a leadoff home run for Schwarber, his first of the year. Exit velo of 114, so yeah, that ball was crushed. Same score in the top of the fourth, base hit for Adam Duvall. It'll sit for an RBI single. That brings in Austin Riley, and the Braves take a 3-1 lead. In the seventh, Phils trail 3-2, and they had two on, and that's a base hit for Trey Turner. And just like that, we are tied at three. Alec Bohm would be the next batter. His liner to left would bring in two more for the Phils to avoid the sweep. Braves take two from the weekend, but they drop the series finale 5-4.
All right, hitting the pitch now after riding high from their win over the reigning MLS champs Columbus Crew. Charlotte FC was looking to turn one win into two after a pretty rough stretch on the road. Charlotte was mere minutes away from getting another dub. However, a mishap on defense late in the match, late in stoppage time actually, led to Cincinnati being able to level the score with the match ending in a 1-1 draw. And it was a game where Cincinnati had control for most of the night. They had possession for 60% of the match and two more shots on goal. Despite that, Dean Smith came away from the night with an optimistic mindset for what's ahead for the club.
I'd be sat here being a lot more worried if we weren't getting them chances. When teams aren't getting chances, then you know you've got problems. we haven't got problems because we've got people who are willing to run and get into the, and get into areas where you're going to get opportunities. And as I say, our job now is to make them better finishers and be good in their moments, because there were some really good moments today that we probably just didn't capitalize on.
And even though Charlotte didn't get a win, their home unbeaten streak of 12 games is still intact. The club will be back on the road next weekend against New England.
All right, well, prior to yesterday's match here at home, we got to sit down with head coach Dean Smith for the first time since he took over the club in the offseason.
And you already know we had a lot to catch up on, as the club is already six matches into his first season at the helm. Our Carla Gebhardt has the exclusive interview.
You mentioned when you took this job that you wanted to take it because it was going to challenge you in some of the other places that you had coached before. Do you still feel that it's that challenge that you thought it was going to be?
Yeah, definitely. It's a challenge because there's an array of talents within your roster. So you're working with a load of different players and trying to help them on different pathways, where you've got like an Ashley Westwood, for instance, who's played most of his career in the English Premier League. And then, you know, you've got a young lad like Forbesy, who's, you know, just been drafted from college. So it's really interesting on how we make them improve and how we try and get them to where Ashley Westwood is. But it's interesting. It's really enjoyable as well. But they've took on the information really well. Sometimes too literally, so I have to re-coach them a little bit and we have to revisit. But no, they've been really good.
And you mentioned too that you wanted to kind of stamp this club with the culture that you wanted to bring here. And I feel like that's pretty evident with the way that the guys are playing. Do you feel that way as well?
I think the culture is growing, yeah. I always believe when somebody comes to, you know, this facility, for instance, that they see people with smiles on their faces, having a bit of a laugh and a joke, but also determined to work and get better. And I think if you have that at a place, any workplace, then you can only have a good culture, and you're striving for ways to continually evolve that.
I know we're catching up right now on just your coaching experiences so far in Carolina, but after a game like this weekend against Columbus, we have to talk about that game. Maybe not necessarily, I mean, you want to, right, because you won the game. But this is, I mean, people are talking about it, one of the craziest matches that they've ever seen, setting records in MLS history, not necessarily in the best way, but how crazy of a match was that when you look back at it?
I've just been filling in the referee's report, so he's taken me 3 days to do that. But yeah, it was crazy. I mean, I've been involved in a lot of games. I think over 1,000 games as both a manager and assistant manager. And I've never had a first half go to 62 minutes. It was crazy. You know, we had VAR interventions, we had penalties that weren't penalties, and goals that weren't goals. It was just, you know, something seems to be happening every 5 minutes. You know, but it is what it is. You know, the officials, they have a tough job. We know that. They've got VAR now, and, you know, the officials they've only been in working with us for the last month, so it's been tough for them as well. So it's nice to see there's an agreement being made now and we can move forward on that.
You mentioned that Ashley Westwood had a good goal. It seems the MLS thinks so as well, giving him the goal of the match day. What was it about that moment to give him that opportunity again? What was going right for that to really take place? It was one of really the best that we've seen in Charlotte FC history.
Yeah, we'd actually just tweaked the system slightly about 2 minutes before. We felt Ashley had just had a shot 2 minutes earlier that he put over the crossbar. And we just felt if we played him a little bit higher, he might get onto any of them balls. And their defender headed one down. He was just in the right place. And he's got very good technique. So there was only one place that was going.
And he has really kind of embodied what the culture is here since you've gotten here as well. What's impressed you most about Ashley and just the way that he leads this team?
Well, I didn't know Ashley before I actually came here. But my teams in the UK had played against him. But I reached out to him when I got offered the job just to find out a little bit. And he said to me, he said, the best advice I can give you is to embrace it. And he certainly has embraced it. He's a really pleasurable young man to have around. His standards are really high, but he's a really good person with that as well. And he's an ideal pick to actually be the captain and lead this group.
Cincinnati's this weekend. How do you feel? I mean, another game at home. How impressed have you been with the fan base? You've had two games at home, another one this weekend. I mean, they really come up in a big way for this team.
They do. The fan base is incredible. I mean, you know, I had fans. I've had family come over from the UK for the first game. I've had family come from Jersey for the second game. And they're all like, wow, your fans are incredible. So, you know, we can feel it, you know, as players, as staff, and, you know, all the front office. So it's amazing to see. So it's another tough game because they're unbeaten so far this season. I think they won the Supporters Shield last year. So we know we're coming up against a good team. But at home with our supporters, we feel we're unstoppable.
I did hear a story before I let you go, and I know you've talked about this openly before, but clean sheets are a big deal to you, and that back line gets a bottle, am I correct, and they get a bottle of wine if they keep a clean sheet?
You are correct, yeah. It's costing me a bit of money at the moment, but money I'm happy to spend. The more clean sheets, the more points we get.
Where did that come from? Have you always done that?
No, so one of my former assistants at Aston Villa, John Terry, who used to play for England and Chelsea, and he used to produce a bottle of red for the Aston Villa defenders, so I thought I'd just take up that mantle.
Appreciate it, Carl. Well, it was another busy week for Dan Morgan at the Panthers front office, as we have some new faces coming to Carolina and some old ones running it back. We take a look back at the recent moves coming up next.
And if you've watched the Hornets the past two seasons, you probably haven't seen that man in the lineup that too often. We have an official update on the status of Charlotte star LaMelo Ball. He might not be back, but we will be in just 2 minutes.
Back here on Charlotte Sports Live, we're with you for another 30 minutes. And we got to talk about the Panthers because it was a big week for them in free agency, Grace.
Yeah, after somewhat dismantling a defense that ranked top five in the NFL last season with shipping off Brian Burns and Frankie Louvu, the Panthers needed to tie up some of those loose ends on that side of the ball. And they did that with a guy that has ties to the Carolinas. That would be Rock Hill native Jadeveon Clowney. He is officially a Carolina Panther after signing a two-year deal with the Black and Blue this past week. The 31-year-old South Point grad is coming off one of his most productive seasons in the league. In his lone season with the Ravens last year, Clowney tied a career high with 9.5 sacks, and that led to him landing a solid payday here with the Panthers, with his contract being worth a max of $24 million. We got to hear from Clowney for the first time this past week since he signed, and although he's excited to be back home, Clowney says he's still got a lot to prove.
I tell people all the time, I can stay. If I play in 16, 17 games, it's going to look like a Pro Bowl season. That's all I got to do is just be out there playing. And I know I can make the plays no matter what team I'm on. The Panthers, I can tell they wanted me, though. They went up and came back with a new offer, and it was great. And I was like, okay, I'm at home. My family down the road, you know, they brought all that into the situation. I was just like, all right, I think this would be the place for me to, you know, come ahead and show these guys I can still do this thing at a high level at 31 years old, which I feel like I'm going to show you this year again. I got to keep proving myself. It's a forever prove it lead. And I know, because the minute you don't, you be out.
Carolina also helped boost the special teams unit this past week by agreeing to terms with linebacker Tate Davis. Davis joined the Panthers last November and is back with the team on a one-year deal. After playing 8 games for the Falcons early in the 2023 season, Davis played the final 8 games here in Carolina, where he recorded 5 tackles on special teams. Of course, these two big moves, but Jadeveon Clowney back here once again, gets to wear his number 7, hasn't worn that number since South Carolina since he was in college.
I was wondering about that too, because I saw Shaq Thompson tweet that out. Should he go back? So that was interesting.
Because it was either they were talking about possibly getting Mike Williams, who wore 7, or Jadeveon Clowney. So Shaq kind of knew, like, all right, let me get back.
54 is a linebacker number.
It is. It's, you know, Brian Urlacher, a lot of the greats. But I think Jadeveon Clowney, another interesting thing too, him really wanted to get Stephon Gilmore back here. Former All-Pro, Defensive Player of the Year, Super Bowl champion. They played at South Point together, played at South Carolina together. I think he's another guy, especially when you look at the cornerback room. J.C. Horn hasn't been that healthy. I think him having a veteran that went to the same school as him, that's been there and done that, could possibly be what he needs in order to help get his career back on track. Just, you know, just having that older mentor here, of course, needs to be healthy as well. But Clowney's going to be a big boost to that defense because they needed to go get another pass rusher after what they lost this past season.
I mean, that was a huge loss for the Ravens this season after what he did. And the Ravens would have kept them. It's just with their cap situation, they couldn't. But they absolutely wanted to. I also just like what he brings. Like, outside of the football and on-the-field stuff, I thought this Panthers locker room was lacking just maturity, if you want to call it emotional maturity, if you want to just call it normal maturity. Right. If just somebody in that room that has a voice that is established, that guys will listen to because they have proven it on the field, but also with the ties to Carolina. You sure. hear the vets of like Thomas Davis and Jonathan Stewart and all those guys Wilson, talk yeah. about how what it means to keep pounding, and he gets that, and I think that's super important.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the Panthers, of course, were busy adding to the roster last week. We also heard from head coach Dave Canales during the league's owners' meetings. He shared a lot of great information about how he's building this team from front to back, inside out, and the staff he's assembled is all about developing these players, figuring out what makes this team tick, where are the strong suits, and if they can figure that out. But don't count them out of the postseason. Make no mistake about it, to get to the postseason, you have to win the NFC South, and that's where Canales' sights are set right now.
So you're looking to win the division. Every year you'd love to win the championship, but it all starts off by winning the division. How can we do that? And then you work backwards from there. Well, we got to get our football right so we can win each game. And taking advantage of all the opportunities to just get better incrementally. So it brings us back to today. We got to continue to be competitive in free agency to look what's out there. We got to prepare like crazy for the draft. We got to have a great offseason of teaching our systems, teaching our language, making sure that we can get a unified communication. Because if we can streamline our communication, then we'll be able to go where we want to really fast.
There were also a number of rule changes coming out of the league meetings last week. Not only was a ban put in place on the hip drop tackle, but we'll see changes to kickoffs next season as well. The XFL was the first league to adopt the new rule where kickers stay in their same spot, but the kicking team lines up on the opposing 40-yard line with the receiving team just 5 yards away on the 35. No player from either team is able to move until the ball lands in the target zone or is touched. And gone are the days of kickers booting it through the back of the end zone. A 30-yard touchback instead of the standard 20 yards will now be the result of the ball going out of bounds, beyond the receiving team's goal line, hitting the goalpost, or landing at or inside of the receiving team's end zone. Commissioner Roger Goodell thinks this will be a good change, helping cut down on injuries, but the NFL might not be done tinkering with it just yet.
I think we're still going to have to tinker with it. I think it's one of those things when you get it in play, you look at things and you will reevaluate that as the season's going on. And if it's appropriate to make changes in the future, we will. So I think it'll be a big improvement. I think it will bring the play back into, a relevant play, an important play, and an exciting play. And I think we can do it where the injury rate hopefully will drop.
All right, I'm not a football player, never played football, but I think as a fan, as somebody who covers football, I think the kickoff rules are fine. I mean, I think anytime you can make the game more exciting in that way without completely changing the game, I like that. The big rule change was the hip drop tackle. Yeah. What do you make of that? Because there was a lot of heat, obviously, J.J. Watt putting out the let's just put flags on them tweet. That caught a lot of traction.
I mean, that's the thing, too, because it's like, how do you want these guys to tackle? I mean, you don't want it to hit them up high. You don't want it to hit them too down low. But you talk to a lot of players, a lot of them honestly prefer being hit up high sometimes. But now it's just figuring out how to officiate it, because you can't just be super nitpicky and handing out flags or handing out fines to different guys. So I think this could be a bit of a slippery slope, but the kickoff thing, I think it's going to be very interesting, because I love a good kickoff return. Devin Hester taking it back in the Super Bowl, having that play back to make it special in special teams is going to be
I great. Also wonder, like, just real quick, the thing was the defense will have to adjust. It's like, how come we don't teach the offense, just to play devil's advocate, how come we don't teach the offense to adjust to how to go down properly?
Let's go both ways. Well, back to the Hornets. So on Thursday, we did get some clarity on the status of Hornets star LaMelo Ball. Ball, who hasn't played since January 26th, will actually miss the remainder of the season as he continues to rehab from a right ankle injury. You know, he first went down last November against the Magic and missed nearly 7 weeks before coming back for only 7 games. Over the past 2 seasons, LaMelo has only played in 58 games combined. Well, it's tough not having a star player on the floor. See if Clifford feels LaMelo has been attacking his rehab rather well.
He's been very diligent about all of his rehab and work, and, you know, and his ankle just hasn't responded. So really, it's as simple as that. Injuries are part of this league. And like, again, all I know is he's been incredibly diligent. So it's not like, it's just, you know, it's not anybody's fault. You know, it's the way it's worked out.
And for those who are all about numbers, the 58 games that LaMelo Ball has played the last 2 years accounts for just 35% of a possible 164 regular season games. Oof.
Just that fight back over the last 4 years has been something that, like, none of us will take for granted.
Well, they missed punching their ticket to Tokyo, but now the Charlotte-based women's field hockey team is going to Paris. How the team is preparing next. Back here on Charlotte Sports Live, well, we are just a few months out from the 2024 Summer Olympic Games in Paris. The United States has almost 500 athletes already qualified in 30 different sports. 16 of those athletes are on the women's field hockey team that is actually headquartered right here in Charlotte. And after the team missed out on the Summer Games in 2021 in Tokyo, these women are more motivated than ever.
They have another chance.
A game-winning goal that got them one step closer to their ultimate goal. The U.S. women's field hockey team pulled off three straight shutouts in the Olympic qualifiers to punch their ticket to Paris.
Just that fight back over the last 4 years has been something that, like, none of us will take for granted.
None of them were also on the roster in Rio, which was the last time the team qualified for the Olympics.
Internationally, we're definitely inexperienced to other teams, but I think what's special about us is that we don't let that be an excuse.
The United States has qualified and competed in 7 out of the 12 Summer Games since the sport was introduced by the IOC in 1980. And with the team now headquartered in North Carolina, these women hope they can inspire the next generation to chase their Olympic dreams and grow the sport.
Moving to Charlotte has been a big opportunity because it's not huge here. A lot of us are from the East Coast where it's a more populated sport, so that has been awesome coming, and a bunch of girls get involved with the local club. So I think we're doing a good job of trying to grow it, and we'll keep on that.
All right, and we are cheering for them because USA Women's Field Hockey has not medaled at the Olympics since winning bronze here on home soil in the 84 Olympics in Los Angeles. Our women are currently ranked 13th in the world, and they will face second in the world Argentina to open up Olympic play in July. Well, North Wilkesboro Speedway is getting a bunch of renovations done for its second round of hosting All-Star Weekend, but they have a sinkhole problem that's filled with moonshine. More on that crazy discovery coming up next here on Charlotte Sports Live.
Back here on CSL, and here's a fun fact for you. There might not be NASCAR without moonshine. The sport's first racers were also bootleggers. Now there may be evidence proving decades-old rumors of a hideaway for a still underneath the grandstand at North Wilkesboro Speedway. But as Queen City News reporter Daniel Pierce tells us, some believe there's a different explanation behind a cave at the famed North Carolina track.
The North Wilkesboro Speedway is one of the most historic spots in stock car racing. Its operators believe a discovery of a cave underneath the stands last week confirms an urban legend linked to moonshine. People that grew up here say there's a more logical explanation to it.
Heard the stories, the urban legend, heard the rumors that there could have been something happening here at the Speedway, bootlegging.
The North Wilkesboro Speedway is a time capsule which seems to keep revealing pieces of its story with each generation.
It's kind of fun to think about.
It's long been believed and passed down in stories moonshine was run out of the racetrack and even distilled in hidden spots under the grandstand. A tall tale of homebrew no one has fully been able to prove. That is, possibly until last week.
Part of that urban legend, some of the stories that you've always heard about moonshine or a possible moonshine still being located here at North Wilkesboro Speedway back in the past.
Turn one renovations led to the discovery of a sinkhole. When Speedway Motorsports crews did some more digging, they found a 700 square foot cave, which could match up to rumors of moonshine being hid and run out of the speedway in the early days. The speculation has brought fascinated fans to the stadium to get their glimpse of history, like this couple vacationing from Wisconsin.
And I like watching the moonshiners on TV and stuff like that, so it kind of piqued my interest.
People thought it was going on, and then all of a sudden it sort of kind of comes full circle, and now we're really going to find out.
And sometimes the simplest explanation is sometimes the right explanation.
Steve Wilson has 2 decades of research knowledge of the Speedway and says these photos show the open space couldn't be a moonshine still, but rather an old gate entrance.
There's the cut-through gate between the berm and what is now the grandstands in turn one. Covered it with concrete and eventually covered it with seats.
Whatever it may be, the unearthed space has reignited a love for the history of the Speedway with white lightning that shows no signs of slowing down.
They got to do a lot more exploring in that cave to determine exactly what it is. They do expect to have it all completed, though, and the stands ready for race day here in about 2 months. At North Wilkesboro Speedway, Daniel Pierce, Queen City News.
I appreciate it, Daniel. Well, getting on the ladder to cut down the nets is a long-standing tradition in college hoops. However, when you're 7'4 like this guy, Zach Edey, you don't really need the extra boost. Edey and Purdue are now 2 wins away from being crowned national champs. See what gets our QC crown coming up next when we wrap up CSU. All right, time to wrap up the night with our QC crowns. Grace, start us off on this Sunday night, or this time, really Monday morning.
Yeah, okay. Well, you guys are going to be so over me by the time this baseball season is over. My crown tonight going to the New York Yankees after they swept the Astros to open up the season. Our outfield is fire. Juan Soto is fire. He's 9-for-17 to start the season. He's batting 5-something. Who cares? Yankees are 4-0. They beat the Astros, and I am just, I just cannot believe that Juan Soto is a Yankee, and it makes me so happy.
Do they win it all this year, or is it too early to tell?
Yeah, 28, right. Here we come.
All right, we'll see. Well, I feel like it's only right that I give out my crown to the entire NC State Wolfpack Hoops program, the men and the women, both in the Final Four this season after some incredible runs. Of course, the guys riding high as an 11 seed after winning the ACC tournament, then four straight so far in the Big Dance. How about the ladies, led by Isaiah James, taking down top seed Texas today to punch their ticket to the Final Four in Cleveland. NC State, the first school to have its men's and women's teams in the same Final Four in the same year since UConn in 2014. UConn that year, they won the titles in both men's and women's, so we'll see if NC State can get it done real quick. Who wins it all on the men's side? We got the final.
I have UConn winning it all. I just think they are too tough on both sides of the ball.
I do as well. That's the only team I have left in my bracket. I think they cut down the nets. For Grace Grill, I'm Gabe McDonald. We'll do it again tomorrow night. Good night, guys.